Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
And the spring blossoms, they were coming through. Dear lover, I don't wanna be with another. I'll be waiting while I'm singing this to you. Letters in a jar, waiting for the stars to align. In my bed once more, looking at the clock, keeping track of time.
To the Letter, a celebration of the lost art of letter writing, Simon Garfield asks, can anything be done to revive a practice that has dictated and tracked the progress of civilization for more than 500 years? Tracing the history of letter writing from the love letter to the cover letter, from handwritten notes to typewriters to emails and texts, To the Letter explores letter writing manuals, letters as a literary device, and how pen pals are still relevant today, albeit in a different form. In speaking with Simon Garfield about To the Letter, he talks about how many of the developments of digital communication still leave us with a question: what do we gain and what do we lose?
So the question is, are we prepared to really throw, well, we have the history, but throw our future history away by just writing, you know, emails and texts and my argument is that, you know, what a great thing we're losing, and how will historians of the past be able to, you know, tell about historians of the future be able to tell about our lives now if we don't write it down? And people say, well, you know, oh, we've got emails, but I think emails are very much a passing phase, and I think that, you know, the way that the young people are writing, it's all very short form communication. It's all texts and tweets, and everyone's got their Facebook page open, you know, on their computer and phone, and that's how we communicate now. So it was an attempt to celebrate what's gone before and to ask questions about what's going to happen in the future as well.
And I guess when it comes to that future, my question is, and it was throughout reading the book, is can't we do both?
Well, ideally, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it? Because, you know, I'm a fan of new technology. I email and text as much as anyone else. But I think we're quite lazy as a race, and we tend to go for the easiest option and sometimes the cheapest option. You know, we kind of think, well, you know, gosh, emails and everything else are very easy, and we change the way we write as a result. You know, so where when we write now digitally, I don't think we write with as much depth as we used to. When we communicate, it tends to be less intimate and shorter. It's quite hard now, I think, to find the time sometimes to, you know, settle down for an afternoon and say, okay, I've got these, you know, three or five letters to reply to and or initiate a correspondence. I think people think you're a little bit mad now if you kind of send a letter rather than an email. And they think, hang on a minute, what do you mean? I've got to now sit down myself and write back and find an envelope and a stamp and wait 3 days for, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think we've reached, you're right, I mean, it would be ideal to have both, but I think we've pretty much reached the point now of no return. I mean, obviously, the you know, I in an ideal world, I'd like my book to sort of inspire people to keep on writing. And if that happens in any form, I'd be happy.
I think one of the things that you just mentioned, and it's in the book, and I find it interesting and fascinating, is that yes, through text and email, things become much less intimate. They become much less detailed. the thing you lose ultimately is language, the beauty of the language.
I think that's exactly right. You know, I concentrate. Obviously, I've got a wide choice of people I can write about in a book about letters, but I tended to gravitate towards writers and, in particular, poets. I write about John Keats, and then I write towards the end of the book, I devote a chapter to Ted Hughes and Sylvia Plath and the way they wrote not only to each other but to their children as well. And you're right, it's the language that shines through, really. They write in a very lyrical and poetic way. But I think we used to as well, you know, the people who weren't famous, people who weren't poets, used to just spend more time. And you can tell this because, you know, the sentences are full sentences. The paragraphs are kind of thought out. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end to a letter that doesn't exist so much in other forms. And obviously, there are, you know, we tend not to use text speak when we write a letter. And this is why, you know, my kids are in their early 20s, and they regard sort of email as too formal for them. You know, what they want to do is just kind of very instant stuff. They think, oh God, you know, I mean, it's for them, it's as much of a process as writing a letter, sending an email. So we're not, you know, as I said, you know, even that I think is sort of a passing phase. But interestingly enough, you know, there are a lot of abbreviations. We tend to think of, you know, LOL and all those kind of things as they knew. But actually, even in Roman times, I find an example where people got bored of this is 2,000 years ago. People got bored of writing the traditional thing that we still write in letters, which is, you know, hi Joe, how are you? I'm fine, and my family are fine. And that's what you do at the beginning of the letter. And they got so bored with doing this that they abbreviated it to 6 or 7 letters. So they had Latin, and, you know, they abbreviated to something like SVVBQR or something. The idea that we, the idea that text speak and abbreviations are new is not the case at all.
One of the things that came to my mind while reading the book is that you have these two sides of the equation. You have the writer and you have the recipient. And we talk a lot about the writer, of not getting people not wanting to do that act of writing the letter. But I found also in extremely anecdotal circumstances that people don't much seem to much want to read them either. If they see long letters, they just tend to put them aside.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think there is this feeling that perhaps people put them aside, thinking, well, I've got to devote a little bit more time to this than I would do normally with digital communication, because I know it's going to be longer, and also I know that I'm going to have to give some thought to my reply as well. I mean, I can only talk obviously from personal experience, but if I receive a long letter, what I tend to do is sort of keep it up for a certain part of the day where I know I'm going to enjoy it, you know, where perhaps I'll be on my own and, you know, I can actually savor it in a way that one might savor a nice piece of food or something like that. It's a kind of rare thing now. You know, normally, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, it would be part of your daily routine. You know, you would receive your letters, you know, ideally in the morning, or if you left for work very, very early when you got home, and you would devote an hour, and that would be part of your daily life. Now, of course, it's such a rare thing that we receive anything through the post that isn't, you know, a demand for money. We tend to sort of regard it as a kind of bauble to be you know, considered when the rest of the day is done.
Also, I think it's fascinating in the book because you address the issue of history and how will we know about history. And historians so often use these incredible correspondence that they've had with various people over an extended period of time. And not only do we have the writing of the letters, the receiving of the letters, but we have the keeping of the letters. And that's very disturbing to think that that whole part of our history and culture is gone.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, you know, the important people who consider these things these days are the you know, the archivists and the curators of the big public institutions, the big universities and libraries, and they're beginning to, well, they've been meeting now for several years, thinking, how are we going to, first of all, maintain and receive and then display what they call born digital material, you know, material that hasn't been written and then digitized, but began as digital material. And it's very difficult. I mean, we are becoming, the way we write is becoming slightly more homogeneous in a digital format now. So, you know, most computers can read most things. So that's becoming a bit easier than it was 10 years ago when that wasn't the case. Their fear is that things are going to get easily deleted, easily hidden behind impossible firewalls and passwords, and that, you know, often the only way to access some material will be through the computer itself, if that survives, you know. And so it's interesting that that a couple of years ago, Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, bought, along with Salman Rushdie's early manuscripts and paper files, also bought all his computers. So you can now go to Emory and pretend to be a virtual Salman Rushdie and read his letters and manuscripts on his old computer. But that's fine if you're a famous author. Less good if you want to find things from your family history in 100 or 200 years' time. That's going to be much harder, I think.
The name of the book is To the Letter, A Celebration of the Lost Art of Letter Writing. Simon Garfield is the author. The book is published by Gotham Books. Simon Garfield, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great talking with you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, To the Letter, A Celebration of the Lost Art of Letter Writing. It's published by Gotham Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.